that the gay establishment doesn't understand what the gay movement's all about. Gotta get rid of them. And I'm not telling they're not nice guys, not nice, wonderful people. I'm not talking about that they're fun people to be with. But if they don't understand what the gay movement's about, you gotta get rid of them. And I'll tell you what the gay movement's about.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. On this special broadcast, we are proud to present in its entirety a rare interview with assassinated San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk. An exclusive, intimate half hour with the legendary gay activist, because you've discovered This Way Out. It was March of 1978, and a gay volunteer reporter at a Los Angeles community radio station took a trip to interview newly elected San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk. Their conversation covered civil rights activism, coalition politics, and Milk's own assessment of some of the gay power brokers of the day. Milk was assassinated 8 months later. The reporter was Greg Gordon, who went on to become This Way Out's coordinating producer. Gay director Gus Van Sant's 2008 film generated renewed interest in Milk's story, fueled by Sean Penn's Oscar-winning portrayal. Moviegoers found out, just like you're about to, that much of what Harvey had to say continues to resonate.
See the way he walks down the street. That's the way he shuffles.
Harvey Milk. I'm a supervisor in San Francisco.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
I'm gay.
And so am I. And we're up in San Francisco in Harvey's office at Castro Camera. And Harvey's graciously taken a few minutes out of his very busy schedule to talk to us about politics in San Francisco and how he got elected, the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in California history.
I'd like to also talk about the politics in California rather than San Francisco.
That's fine.
Because I don't think there's a delineation.
You don't think that there's a difference in politics in San Francisco as opposed to, let's say, politics in Los Angeles?
It's a matter of degree. There's no moat built around the city of San Francisco that separates us from the rest. Sometimes we wish there were. But I think what takes place in San Francisco, for whatever reasons, can take place any place. It's just a matter of understanding what it's all about. And San Francisco, it's very interesting because of the fact that I'm gay, that becomes the big media event that sells the newspapers. But it's very important that we realize that I was elected as a candidate who was gay rather than a gay candidate. Did I run on a gay issue? In San Francisco, the difference from LA is that we are both county supervisors and city council people, one and the same. The city is divided into 11 districts. And since we are city and county, it's one powerful, very powerful legislative group. You have to picture if your L.A. City Council and your L.A. Board of Supervisors were one and the same, that's what we are. And we are an activist group rather than puppets of the strong mayor or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or a strong police chief.
Or a strong police chief. We are very, very strong in this city. In the 11 districts that were up for election this past year, there were a total of something like 162 candidates altogether. Of the 162 candidates, of all the, there were 11, not even 11, there were about 7 or 8 who were incumbents who ran. 6, I guess. And exit those out, because they have a record of voting on issues. of all the other 150 some odd people, I was probably the most issue-oriented person running. Probably had taken more strong definitive stands, not yes, I'm for that, no, I'm not for that, but why, and been in the battles than all the other candidates running. Probably more issue-oriented than some of the supervisors who ran for re-election. At least I'm more. And it's vital to know that it took 4 years, or 5 years, or whatever it was, to build up that kind of a reputation.
Yes, because you had run for office in the past.
It had nothing to do with running for office. The reason I ran for office is because I was issue-oriented. You know, people say, oh, you ran for office, name recognition. No. In my particular district, we've had about 5 or 6 major district battles versus citywide problems. In every one, I was involved in them, on one side or the other. There wasn't one other candidate. There were 17 people running this district. There wasn't one other candidate that had been involved in every single district problem. I was there. People on the streets would say to me, Harvey, I don't agree with your issue, but I know you're a fighter. I know you're there. I know you will be there when we need you. Let me give you a classic case of this. It's going to be controversial right now. We have a statewide primary coming up, Attorney General. One of the people running for statewide in the Democratic primary is Yvonne Burke.
Mm-hmm.
My heart goes there. She's black, and she's a woman. Wham, there I go. But, going in Orange County at the Democratic statewide meeting a couple months ago, where they all spoke, Orange County conservative, Orange County, most of the people there, in fact, I was the only elected official outside of the L.A. Orange County area. So you had basically the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. Yvonne Burke got up and talked about the black people, talked about women. Great. She sat down. Bert Pines got up and talked about battered wives, what he's done for them, the Latinos, what he's done for them, the blacks, what he's done for them, abused children, what he's done for them, and the gay community, what he's done for them. 3 times in his speech, he talked about what he's done for the gay people in front of a very conservative audience. 3 months later, after the campaign trail, and these people have heard each other back and forth, in Sacramento, before the Democratic Minority Coalition, which is the traditional minorities, the feminists, and the gay people, they're speaking, knowing who the audience is speaking to. This is now not the conservative wing of the Democratic Party, but the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. They got up, Yvonne gets up and talks about the black issue, about women, sits down, Burke gets up and talks about the same thing. That's the difference. He's done his work. He's paid his dues. He's mm-hmm. willing to talk about it. He's an activist. He was involved doing things. She will vote right, but he's been there. A lot of candidates I ran against would vote right, the same as I do. But they wouldn't be the activist, they wouldn't be the advocate, they wouldn't be the leader.
And I think that's what people are looking for these days, is somebody who will, you know, that's what we're crying out for, up even to the federal government.
Okay,
you know?
Statewide, let's get together statewide. May 5th, I think it's May 5th, or May 6th, Sunday. May 6th, I guess it is. Sunday, L.A., we're calling together a statewide caucus of gay people. Convention, blah, blah, but not endorsement. And we're inviting all the candidates for statewide office, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, and I guess secretary of state.
It's nonpartisan?
Nonpartisan. Democrat, Republican, Peace and Freedom, American Independent. We want gay people from all over the state to come. We're sending the letters to these people. We would have this caucus. We're going to say that you have 10, 15 minutes to present your case and then questioning. And we don't want to hear about dams. We don't want to hear about redwood trees. We want to hear about what you think on the gay issues. What you think on that. And then we'll accept questions from the audience, filter them through a panel of gay newspaper people so that someone doesn't get up and do a 10-minute tirade. And I say, hey, right?
Yeah.
Like I do. And they'll be asked questions. If Jerry Brown does not show up, that will be published. If he shows up, what he says will be published. There'll be no endorsements. But we will disseminate the information.
It's a forum, basically.
It's a forum. It's like the black community does. We must follow what the black community does. Black community does this on a national level. All the candidates for Democratic primary for president met before the black leadership forum, or whatever it was called, in North Carolina, and talked about black issues. We must do the same thing in the gay community. We must move out of San Francisco, out of L.A., we must move to California. If you add the gay community with the other traditional minorities, we should have control of the state. But we cannot sit in the back of the bus and let the other minorities lead. We should show the leadership. In fact, we're in an incredible position. You see,
well, let me ask you, are other minorities coming around to realizing that they can and should work with the gay community?
Oh, yeah. Lieutenant Governor Dimely has stuck his neck out for the gay community over and over again. When Willie Brown's sexual bill was before the thing, he flew in from Denver to cast that vote in front of the eyes of the world. So he stuck his neck out there, and he understands working together, and he understands the importance of gay people in there. But it's very interesting. Take San Francisco, which is a very heavy minority city. Over 50% of the population is minority. Because of the fighting for those crumbs, sometimes the black community doesn't talk to the Filipino, won't talk to the Asians won't talk to anybody, you know. That. Nevertheless, they all talk to me, the gay person, partly for two reasons. One, because within the gay community, we have gay Asians, gay blacks, gay Filipino, you know, we are infiltrated. That's part of the reason. We cut across the line. Second of all, for whatever reasons, I'm the one that can pull it together. So we are trying strongly to pull together that coalition. In view of that, we realized, at least I have always realized, is the voter registration. We are kicking off a massive voter registration drive with the Chinese and gay community together soon. You know, there's many reasons for that. Working very tight with the Asian community, very tight. And if we can pull it off here, and if LA pulls it off, if we pull it off statewide, that within 10 years, the minorities will be running the state. And when the minorities, I'm talking about the feminists, I'm talking about the gays included in that. And so we have to fight that. We have to fight with our natural allies. But it can't be just because a person is black or green or gay or orange or whatever it may be. They have to be issue-oriented. You cannot accept someone to get up there, I'm gay, therefore vote for me.
How do you motivate people to register? Because this is a fundamental problem that we've always had.
Motivate them, say, do you like Ed Davis? You like Senator Briggs? You like Anita Bryan? You motivate them because it's, you tell them that the legislators and the executive offices, be they the local supervisor, be they statewide, run your life. They run your life and they spend your money. When they collect tax money from gay people and don't give us anything back in return, take it for their golf courses, take our tax money for their pet projects, and give us, and on top of it, insult us by not giving us our rights. That's not motivation. If you like being harassed by the police, if you like being a third-class citizen, if you like being beat up by punks, if you like the church yelling at you, don't register, don't vote, but don't complain. If you want to be shoved back in your closet, if you want to be the traditional gay person who gets beat up and whimpers home and say, well, I'm gay and I deserve to get beat up, fine. Otherwise, the only thing you can do is register to vote.
What about the reasonably well-off gay couples or gay singles in the hills somewhere who never had any trouble with the police, who've never, you know, they can say, that's never happened to me.
Right.
You know, why should I get involved? My life is beautiful.
Right. I.e., that reminds me of the wealthy Jews in Nazi Germany when Hitler first was picking up the Jewish communists and Jewish socialism. They were scum. That's not us. We are accepted. You know, we've been accepted. We ride in the back of the bus. It's like the Uncle Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, when Hitler started having the concentration camp, he didn't care if you were a Jewish socialist or a Jewish fascist. You were Jewish, you went. When the Briggs and Anita Bryan take over, they don't care if you are the accepted hairdresser or the gay doctor or the gay lawyer or the gay society person. You are gay, you will go off. And if they don't, if you don't, I mean, if that sounds like a stereotype thing, stop and think Nazi Germany, what it did to the gay people. There were 600,000 gay people killed. Prior to Hitler's taking over in the 20s, the gay movement in Germany was more advanced than the gay movement in San Francisco in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
There was a statewide, a nationwide convention of gay people in Germany, 8,000 gay people. We've never had anything like that here. There were letters written to the Reichstag to tell them to throw out the anti-gay laws. Scientists, doctors, everybody was preaching for gayness and acceptability. In Russia, 1917, they threw out the anti-gay laws. And then Stalin took over. And that was the end of the gay movement. Hitler took over, the end of the gay movement. And if you think history doesn't repeat itself, you're crazy. And the only defense about that is it's not just to be organized, but to get involved and to realize who the common enemy is.
You're listening to a conversation with the late Harvey Milk on This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Unfortunately, within the gay community, we have such a class distinction and racism within the gay community and sexism within the gay community. because some people think they're better than the rest. When it comes down to it, we all do the same thing. And the elitists in the gay community, those who are accepted, those who are the Uncle Toms, those who have sold out, must realize that when the push comes to shove, that if Senator Briggs wins against the gay school teachers, the next thing he may say is, we don't want gay people to vote. And when my gay, elitist, wealthy brother or sister says, I don't have to worry, I don't get in trouble with the police, I don't go to the bars, I don't go to this, okay, it's that old story in Germany. You know, first it was the gays and the gypsies and then the Jews, and they kept going, and finally there was nobody to protest. You got to stop them at the beginning. They got to get involved. The gay elitists, the gay wealthy people, the gay society people, the gay people who have made it, they have to fight the battle now.
In many cases, they're in the better positions to be able to do it, too.
And they also are in a position to lose more. Because the gay street person, i.e. whatever that means, what does that person got to lose by fighting the battle?
Well, that's why they were out in the front
right,
at the beginning.
Right. But the well-to-do, those who have made it, they've got a lot to lose. They've got to lose what they're worried about. And they're the ones who have to come through, and if they want to stay in the closet and so forth, fine, but get their checkbooks out of the closet. It's needed. It's desperately needed that their checkbooks come out of the closet. I know the power I have as elected official in this city. It's incredible. I mean, I'm restricted by the charter of what I can do or I can't do, but boy, can I do it. And I know that when I speak out in this city, I mean, the police department is nervous, the Chamber of Commerce is nervous. I know the power I have. And if you don't start, whoever's listening, if you don't start helping electing gay people, and not just gay people, but gay fighters who will get up and not take it and sit back, who will fight for it, if you don't start electing it, we ain't going to be in trouble. Gay street people have to register and vote, and they have to realize that it cannot be only voting for the people who believe in every single thing they do. You know? There's no such thing. There's no such perfect candidate. You know, they have to compromise and bend to realize things. And the gay person who is living in the hills has to realize that he or she can't only support the conservative type people or the respectable type people. That you both have to lose. You both will lose. And if you don't get together, and you've got to join hands now, it's desperate. It's desperate.
We had a couple of gay people running in as candidates for assembly in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles districts 44th and 46th. Some political gay political clubs did not endorse them. I'm not going to be critical. I don't want to get into that issue. But what I want to ask you is, what happens when you have two or three or four gay political groups or gay organizations that are in a position to help, but who cannot seem to get together? Because obviously, you've got to have a coalesced movement in order to elect somebody. What can you say to these people?
In my first three attempts to run, I run four times if I win. I was never supported by the gay establishment. I was never supported by the gay political leaders. I was never supported by the gay clubs. And the reason why is if I won, I would have been what I am now that I won. And they would no longer be the top of the hill. They don't realize that there's room at the top for a lot of people. They wanted to be, they rather have been the Uncle Tom in the back of the bus, or the Aunt Mary as I call them, and have be the token, be the first to discover Barbara Streisand, to be, you know, the token fag, rather than to see a gay person elected and the power go that way. They didn't realize there's room for plenty. And I have found out in San Francisco, the so-called gay leaders of the time, the Jim Forsters and all those people, they were for themselves, they were not for the gay movement. That their attitude was so offensive that they would back straight people. I found that their influence was such that they brought Elaine Noble 3,000 miles cross country to campaign for a straight person against me, a gay person, both of whom she had never met. And even this year, Alice B. Toklas would never support me. Some of the other gay
Democrats. You're referring, for those who don't know, to the Alice B. Toklas Democratic Club,
right,
which is the version of the Stonewall Democratic
right.
Club in Los Angeles.
And some of the other Democratic clubs this time did. They finally realized what it was all about. And finally, I was able to break. It took me four times to convince them. And the thing is that I've always done well, even though these people were knifing me, lying, smearing, and everything else about me. That I really, because the people in the streets understood. The people in the battles understood. We haven't met. And so my answer is to L.A. is get it together. I find it offensive that gay leadership is so jealous of somebody else. I find that offensive. I find that people who say, oh, well, but we owe this to this person like that, I say, bull. You owe it. The reason is gay political clubs is to get the ultimate, is to get gays elected. That's why it exists, because we've been sitting. And then to walk away from gay candidates, unless they are unqualified, that's a different story. When I say unqualified, I mean when they're really ass, X-rated. Beep. If they no good, if they turkeys, that's a different story.
Well, if they're turkeys, they probably should never have gotten to the point where they're running in the
first. Well, no, turkeys can run. Anybody
that's
can
true.
Run.
Well, yeah, I've seen that.
Turkeys get elected.
God knows.
But when you're faced with a gay turkey and a straight turkey, you know, you go to the gay. And show me how many great non-gay candidates there really are. But to come up with the reasons that I read about, I know that the gay candidates in L.A. were facing the same thing I did. My advice to them is that then work that much harder and throw out those so-called gay leaders who are not gay leaders, but they are self-perpetuating self-leaders, self-appointed, have never done anything to get broad-based support, elitist support, yes, or groups, yes, but never
very much like David Goodstein, and yet I understand Goodstein did not support
you. Oh, Goodstein fought against me bitterly,
and then threw him through a victory party for you.
He lost. You know, at least he's smart enough to realize who won. He lost, and he understands. You know, Goodstein was always against me, used everything he could against me, and he never met with me, never understood what it was about. But if the gay establishment doesn't understand what the gay movement's all about, you gotta get rid of them. And I'm not telling you they're not nice guys, not nice, wonderful people. I'm not talking about that they're fun people to be with. But if they don't understand what the gay movement's about, you gotta get rid of them. And I'll tell you what the gay movement's about. After I got elected, I got the phone call I knew I'd eventually get. Got caught a few of them. One was from a 17-year-old child in a small town in Minnesota. And the boy is handicapped. And the boy's parents found out he's gay, and they want to put him in an insane asylum. And that boy needs help. And the gay movement is about the letter I got from Southwest Africa when he read about a gay person getting elected here. And that person has hope. And that 17-year-old kid in Minnesota has hope. And when we have gay leaders not understanding that and are more worried about their own personal power, they're not gay leaders. They're offensive.
Another reason that some people don't register or don't want to get involved in what they will call, quote, establishment politics is that they're just anti-establishment politics, period. You know, that the way to change the system is revolution, blah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What can you say to these people who don't want to get involved, who don't want to register, who feel like voting and the whole establishment political process is a waste of time and not the way to do it?
Okay, the establishment political process stinks. I, too, would prefer to throw a bomb, except the establishment has more bombs than I have. So the option is something that I told, about 3 years ago. 3 years ago, there were a group of three, or maybe it was 4 years ago, three of gay socialists came in who I know. And we had a nice long talk, and they talked about how bad the system was, and that the system has to be overthrown. Then we got talking about police brutality and harassment. And I said after a while, what if you were the three police commissioners, and I was the chief of police? And they said, great. I said, I thought the system stinks. It's not the system that stinks, it's the people who are running the system stinks. If everybody out there who thought the establishment and the system was rotten were running it, if the most radical liberal person, revolutionary person was the mayor of L.A., and the next one was the chief of police, and the next group of the city council, the next group of the board of supervisors, they would be able to change the system. You have two ways of changing the system, revolution or getting in and bending it from within. Unfortunately, revolution will not work. I mean, it ain't gonna happen. As long as there's two cars in every garage and a drop of gasoline and a TV set and you can wash your glasses and not get spots on it, the revolution is not gonna exist because people are afraid of the unknown. And so they rather have the awful conditions that exist rather than the unknown. The revolution will not be televised. But rapid evolution can take place already on the Board of San Francisco Supervisors in 6 weeks. Things that were never discussed before have been discussed. The dialogue has been opened, which was never there before, and we won a lot of the votes. The very first major battle, and it doesn't sound like a major battle, but it is a major battle, was the location of a drug rehabilitation center, a Latino drug rehabilitation center in a white neighborhood. And the conservatives just won at it. And I battled them. I really battled them on it. And we won. We won the vote. A, that dialogue would never have taken under the old board. 7 weeks ago, that would never even come up for vote. And B, we won it. So what is revolution, you know? It's not what I like to see. But we are going to have a rapid evolution. We've already had it in San Francisco. Just stop and think. The day the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco was sworn in, the tradition is every supervisor gets up and says a few general words and introduces their family there. And the first words out of my mouth, and the national press was there, was, "As you know, I am gay." That has never been spoken before in any legislative body in this country. And I said that there's a state law that says gay people cannot legally be married. But there is no state law or law any place in the universe that says two people cannot love each other. And I like to introduce my lover. And if that's not a revolution, I don't know what is. Sure, it's not what we want. But, you know, we're battling thousands of years of prejudice and thousands of years of a system. It's got to change. It's not going to be easy. I can only do it if I have a lot of support out there. Can't have a lot of support out there if people are not aiding financially and registering and voting. And there's got to be a lot more Harvey Milks. This has got to be. There's too many young kids in little towns in Minnesota.
Listening to a rare interview with assassinated San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk. The correspondent was Greg Gordon. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio magazine. This week, Buena Vista and the Byrds performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is an independently produced weekly program distributed free of charge to community radio stations made possible by listener donations. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can support our work and get a CD copy of the conversation with Harvey Milk you heard today. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening on more than 175 stations around the world, including this community radio station. Y'all, stay tuned.